Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online car sales are now allowed, so go online and check out the great product lines at Sunbury Motors. And always remember the Sunbury Motors Service Department, service parts, open 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Neil Coulong on the Steelers draft in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day.
10 seconds to go. The longest wait for a first title any team in this league has had. For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions. It is the last chapter in an incomparable storybook finish for them.
Indeed it is, and they won it on the road. And to their credit, beat the Bruins in seven games. They happen to be now we talk about the original six, the new six. When you look at the new six, Flyers, Penguins, Minnesota North Stars, LA Kings, Oakland Seals, and the Blues. Obviously, the Minnesota North Stars, it's kind of convoluted with those. Obviously, the Flyers and the Penguins and the Blues and the Kings are still exactly where they were when they started in 67. Oakland couldn't really get going, became the California Golden Seals, then moved to Cleveland, then combined with the Minnesota North Stars, then moved to Dallas and won the Stanley Cup as the Dallas Stars. Feel like I'm just giving you a very convoluted roadmap here, but that's how it worked. All right. Okay. All right. I told Neil Coulong that he would come crawling back, and that is, I'd like to point out, exactly what has happened. Neil, really, always great to have you back. Welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. I didn't know what to do with myself for a spell of time there. I wasn't even sure. I was just ranting in my head to myself.
Welcome to what makes this show tick.
That makes three of us.
All right, so the Steelers already have their first-round pick, and that is an all-pro by the name of Minkah Fitzpatrick. In any given year, that would be a great first-round pick. And the Steelers already have that, and they've got a year under their belt with them, or at least three-quarters of the year. So now we get to round two. What should the consideration be, in your opinion, in round two once we get to Friday?
I think the positions I feel they're going to look at the most are going to be running back, offensive tackle, and probably safety, maybe. If not safety, then probably tight end. And I look at it more as, I mean, it's an 8-8 team. It was 8-8 with the worst quarterback situation in the NFL. I'm not going to get past that. I'm also not going to say that Ben Roethlisberger is going to give them, you know, plus six wins this season. Right. They still have some development that they need to do. They're still a young team in a lot of places, and they would have had those issues last year with Roethlisberger. So if they want to look at immediate need, I think a running back, a playmaking running back, a catcher and a runner, an athlete, that type of guy, I think would have the most value for them immediately. In the short term, I think it's offensive tackle, mostly because they have one sign beyond this season. So right. That's something they're going to need to address. That isn't a panic situation either. They have a lot of them. who are there and have proven to be good players. Alejandro Villanueva, I don't think is a guy they don't want to come back. Maybe he's somebody who gets an extension come training camp, whenever that might be. That's certainly on the docket for them. But as we sit going into the draft, they can't guarantee that any of those things are going to happen. So I would think that they would want a tackle that they feel they can develop into a starter by 2021. So that would probably be the consensus for me of what they would go with. But they have no depth at safety, no depth at all at safety beyond two guys that they've invested a lot into. And they're not looking to bring somebody in who's going to challenge even Terrell Edmonds for a starting safety position. I know that that's going to drive Steelers fans nuts, but they've already invested 2 years in him in a high draft pick. They're not going to, you know, look to replace him right now. They're going to want somebody to provide some versatility and some special teams play, which isn't to say that they can't find that anywhere else. I would think a veteran signing would do, but I get a hunch that they're going to want to look at a younger safety in, you know, perhaps the fourth or the fifth round, if they can find another fifth round pick. Tight end is a position I've been banging the drum for a while. Eric Ebron's more of a receiver than he is a tight end. He's not the three down tight end I think they're going to want to develop. I've said this 1,000 times in this segment. I don't think that Zach Gentry is an answer to that. I don't think he got better in a year either. So I'm not sure if they're set there yet. If it were me, I would want to invest in that. You really have one functioning year of Eric Ebron, and like I said, he's not an inline three-down tight end. He's probably going to be more of a slot guy, move tight end. So they have a lot of different options in front of them. And I think just the best player available at these positions that they've probably prioritized are going to be the direction that they would go, barring, you know, perhaps not quite as important a position in the second round. Something like guard, I wouldn't be surprised if they want to build some depth there. But the main holdup, especially in the interior line, but this goes from the tackles as well, they've scouted undrafted free agents, free agent offensive linemen probably better than any other team in the league has over the last several years. So they might feel pretty confident in their ability to identify raw talent and their system of developing these players into starters. I mean, they're converting a lot of these projects now into comp picks that we'll see with guys like B.J. Finney last year, and we've seen it in players like Chris Hubbard in the past, guys that can be comparable starting NFL players somewhere. That they've developed from the ground up. So I wouldn't be surprised if they want to go that route with an interior offensive lineman, but tackle would probably be my guess. The best help right now would probably be running back.
Okay, so let's have some fun here with a wild card. How do you feel about Jake Fromm?
Fromm, to me, he looks like Captain America. He's got that sort of persona, and you think that he should be a lot better than he is. I'm not sold on him being a great player. I think he's a backup NFL quarterback. I don't see anything from him that screams starter, improving starter. Not a great athlete, not a bad one. Not a great arm, not a bad one. Makes pretty good decisions. His college career, I think, was, you know, kind of up and down. But if you look at the top guys of the draft, the guys that go, you know, 1 through 10, and compare them with the players, the quarterbacks who were outside of that number that have made it, what you see in the top guys is freakish levels of collegiate production, high-level stuff, high-level and intangible athleticism, arm strength, or guys like a Lamar Jackson who are playing into a system that was built around him right now. None of these things apply to Jake Fromm at all. I think somebody is, because he's a quarterback, I think somebody probably takes him in the third round. That might make him sneak into the second, but he's not a guy that you're going to invest a ton into. For the Steelers, I think you have Jake Fromm and Mason Rudolph. I think you've put time into that already. It now wouldn't be the year. If it's next year, I can see it, but I don't think right now that they're going to want to invest into a backup quarterback position battle.
Let me ask you that part, though. Okay, so let's just sit down and say let's buy the second round, and they go for best player available at the position you're talking, or positions you're talking about in the second round. What if he's still sitting there in the third round?
It's interesting. I think that exact scenario is what happened with Mason Rudolph. I think they took him because he was still there.
But see, the problem I had with Rudolph was this, is that what they did at Oklahoma State was so system-oriented, and what they did at Georgia was very pro-oriented. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, in terms of the mind, in terms of the accuracy, the question I've had, and I've asked this openly before, does he have enough arm strength? I mean, because you can be accurate all you want, but if you don't have enough arm strength, you can be accurate, but if it's a hair late, it's going to be a hair late. And he also operated behind a good offensive line at Georgia. A middle of the road to a better team, he'd have a better offensive line in front of him. Because if the Steelers were the Bengals, for example, there is no way you make this pick because he can't create on the move. But I'm saying in the third round, do you think, we've now had trials of Mason Rudolph, and, well, I guess we've got to throw a duck out there just to make you mad. and just for the entertainment part of the show. But I think we've seen enough to say maybe somebody else.
I'll say this. I'm not against that. And let's start with Rudolph. The reason I wouldn't be against the idea of a backup quarterback coming into Pittsburgh is I think to some degree we've seen what we're going to see from Mason Rudolph. Now, I'm in the camp that I don't think he was right after that Earl Thomas hit against the Ravens. I think he came back way early.
Completely agree with you. That's a justified opinion, in my opinion.
So he has a ton of bad tape out there. And the reason that Steelers fans everywhere gnash their teeth at the idea of Rudolph staying on the team is based on some pretty horrendous games where, honestly, it looked like he forgot what he was doing some of the time. He didn't look right to me at all. Okay. I was surprised they kept him out there as long as they did.
Agreed.
When he came back, and it's very limited, but when he came back against the Jets, game plan was clearly not to take any risks. Mason, don't do anything stupid. Get out there. Just play smart, and he did that. He played within what they needed him to do. An ugly game all around. I don't know why that's come up so much to me lately, but that Jets game was horrible. I mean, just really bad taste in my mouth still over watching that. But Rudolph, I thought, availed himself well, and of course, until he broke his collarbone or whatever it is that happened with that. I'm not done with Rudolph yet, but that isn't to say there isn't somebody like a Jake Fromm who might have, perhaps some more upside. Because at this point now, you're looking at replacement territory. We really are in the twilight of Ben Roethlisberger's career. And it's easy to suggest that Roethlisberger is going to come in on his white horse and start chucking dimes, 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. We don't really have a great reason to think that's going to happen. I think we have a great reason to think he's not going to be Duck Hodges. But we're going to need a little more than that, Knowing that, are you prepared to say today Mason Rudolph is your future starter? I really hope that's not the case for the sake of the Steelers. Because of that, what's going to be the plan? They're loading up financially on defense. It's going to be harder to go out and buy the starting quarterback, the journeyman, even though I will say we're seeing trends of a lot more of those quarterbacks being available, starting with this year. Andy Dalton wouldn't be a terrible bridge quarterback. Certainly Cam Newton wouldn't be a terrible bridge quarterback. These are guys who are out there. You're going to have to pay him, though. So is the risk, do we want Rudolph to compete against the veteran or to have the veteran in place to come in and start while we try to figure out what we're going to do long term? I'm sure the Steelers have a couple different options, and they're not a franchise that's going to reach too early. But to your point, long-winded way around of saying it, when you get to the third round, though, what are you really looking for? Do you have the value? And I keep going over this in my head, but it's really – repeating what I think is the same issue that they had with Rudolph, just in a more time-appropriate perspective. They did this with Rudolph. I truly think it was a value pick. They didn't expect him to be there in the third. They thought he was a legitimate first or second-round guy, but they had other needs that they wanted to address first, and he was the value guy there. They don't do that very often. That's why you kind of have to pay attention to it. Right. It could be the same thing with Fromm. And if that's the case, is it terrible to say now that Mason Rudolph is in this Landry Jones to Jake Fromm's Josh Dobbs? We took Landry is now our bona fide backup. He's got some NFL wear and tear on him. He knows what he's doing. He's valuable to the room. He's the backup guy. We have a third string quarterback in there that we're going to groom and develop. Maybe that's Fromm. Maybe they want to use a third round pick on a guy like that. I'd have to see who's there. I wouldn't rule it out, but I do think it's a little bit of a reach. But I'll say this. I'm not sold necessarily on Fromm even being a third round guy.
Okay.
So If we get into him being a fourth-round guy, maybe that's a completely different conversation.
At some point, should they think about a wide receiver? Considering the depth of the wide receiver draft, should the Steelers think about one?
For me, I like to keep that room active. And you're in a situation where Juju is, I think, the same age as Deontay Johnson is, even though he's played a year more in the NFL. Right. James Washington is probably around that age as well. They're getting to the point where their experience is going to exceed their age, which I don't think has happened for them yet. That's a good place to be. You're also in an environment where you've got a new wide receivers coach, and the Steelers have done a great job letting receivers coaches come in and coach guys up, younger guys in particular, and get a lot of results out of them. They've really transitioned. So you have to look long term. Which of these guys are you going to keep? I don't think they even draft guys in the second or third round at the receiver position with the idea that all of them are going to sign. I think they want to lock one up long term, which is probably Juju. Right. Long term, though, I think Deontay might be a better receiver. When the chips are down. Juju is a physical freak, but Deontay Johnson, we saw some things from him in the second half of the year were pretty high level. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kid's running great routes. He has a great feel for coverage, a great feel for the game. He's going to be good as well. So if you're doing that at that point, you've got James Washington. If he's in the final year of his contract, which he's not, I would definitely think that they should draft that. Bringing four of them in, letting one develop, a Washington kind of takes, a third receiver duty type of role and let him walk. I could see them doing that, but talent is talent. I don't think you can have enough good receivers, and these are great problems for a team to have to figure out as they go. Which one of these young guys are the best ones to get out there? And with the new coach, I think giving him the younger guys with the enthusiasm, the raw ability that they have, and letting him mold them into where the position on the team is going to go is a good idea. And I'm not against it. And really, what the overlap of all this is, it's a phenomenal receiver draft. We're going to see guys that I think might have been late first-round picks in some years going third.
Right.
So I really think that the value that they're going to be able to bring in all of this is above and beyond what they're used to seeing. And with that, it might be worth using a pick that might not be a complete need right now, but bolstering that position, which might be the second or third most important in the NFL, is always a good idea.
Okay, this last question, but just the quick answer of the name, okay? Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, you're sitting there. Who do you pick?
I'm taking Tua.
There you go.
Tua's my guy there.
There you go. I'm with you. All right. It is so good to hear you, my friend. Please stay safe, and you're invaluable to us.
Definitely. Thank you very much, you guys as well. I'm looking forward to the draft. We'll talk next week.
And that is Neil Kulong joining us on the show. Trade made moments ago. The newest member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is Rob Gronkowski. He has been dealt by the Patriots to the Buccaneers. A seventh-round pick is involved this year, and I think a fourth rounder next year, something like that.
Yep, that's right. Gronk at a seventh for a fourth.
Yep. So there you go. Next, watch O.J. Howard get dealt, okay? Gronk is going to be back in the NFL. He's going to be back, and you know what? He's going to be fresh. Right, back with more in a moment, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Rob Gronkowski has 1 year, $10 million remaining on his contract. And so the report now is that Gronkowski has been dealt by the Patriots to Tampa Bay in exchange for a seventh-round pick. And so that's the story there. I think it's their fourth-rounder that's also involved in this, but it's next year, I think. All right. The other big story, and this would affect, obviously, State College, Williamsport, potentially. We'll see. is the story that Major League Baseball, or it should be Minor League Baseball, which, look, everybody's in survival mode right now. That it looks like that they may have made a step toward agreeing to 120 affiliated teams under the new PBA. But Minor League Baseball released a statement 20 minutes ago. Recent articles on the negotiations between MILB and Major League Baseball are largely inaccurate. There have been no agreements on contraction or any other issues. MILB is looking forward to continuing the good faith negotiations with Major League Baseball tomorrow as we work toward an agreement that best ensures the future of professional baseball throughout the United States and Canada. So that's interesting.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, it's always great to have guests on. Are good enough to be an outstanding head coach to win a national championship, then transition to be an outstanding broadcaster. And I can also say that along with Jack Hamm and I, when we broadcast the Capital One Bowl when Auburn beat Penn State 13-9, and that defense didn't give up a touchdown that day despite having Larry Johnson, the defensive coordinator that day was Gene Chizik. Gene, welcome to the show.
Man, it's great to be on your show, guys. I appreciate the invite.
It's great to have you with us. All right, so let's start with this. Joe Burrow transfers from Ohio State to LSU, and he has a very good junior season. What allowed him, because everybody has to work hard to get to a certain point, Gene, what allowed him to go from a very good junior season to having the kind of signature season he had as a senior?
Well, Steve, I think there's a couple things that really played into that. Number one, he's a grinder. He's a worker. He was a grad student, in essence, at LSU, and he really approached it like an NFL quarterback. He went in early in the morning. He didn't have to really worry a whole lot about school because he was a grad student. He grinded on football. He put in the time. He put in the effort. And he had a new offense that they put in, and he really – he adapted to that offense extremely well. He's got a huge football IQ, comes from a coaching family, and he was one of those guys that just, you saw him get better and better and better, and his confidence grew. Steven, let's not lose sight of the fact that he had a lot of great players around him.
Sure.
That allowed him, when he wasn't great, they made him great. And when he had to put the ball where he needed to put the ball and make those unbelievable throws, he was able to do that. So it was a combination of all of those things that really ended up, he baked a cake that was special. And look, if you look back on it, those numbers are going to be hard to be duplicated as these years unfold.
In fact, it's interesting you mentioned that, Gene. Obviously, great receivers that had around him. But the guy that Jack always talked to me about, Gene, was Allaire. And, of course, Jack's looking at it from a linebacker's point of view, but he thinks Allaire's the kind of guy that's going to help a team.
Yeah, I do too. I was just on another radio show earlier, and they were talking about, give me a surprise guy. I don't know that he's a surprise guy. He's not going to be a first-rounder, Steve, but I think he's first-round talent. I think he's a steal. I really love – look, no one's going to ever talk about a back in protection, blocking for the quarterback. He'll do that. You can split him out as a wideout. You can throw him the ball on the perimeter. If it's him and a safety, him and a linebacker, him and a corner – one-on-one, man-to-man, with a yard to go for the first down, my money goes on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's tough as boots. He can make cuts in the open field. His speed is good enough. I love this guy in the draft, and somebody's going to get a really, really good player in the second or third round.
Yeah, no, I agree. Completely agree with that. Obviously, people are going to ask you about Tua and what he did in the SEC. When healthy, what does he bring to the table? Because obviously he had a lot of weapons around. I mean, a good offensive line, but what makes him a really good pick for somebody?
He's going to make somebody a great pick. And look, I don't have all the evidence in front of me with his health and all those things, but when my when I look at quarterback, and you know, Steve, I've had five first-round quarterbacks on my team through the years, from Dante Culpepper way back in the day to Vince Young and Cam and everybody else, right? So I see a guy right now who is makes to me, a great quarterback makes great decisions. That's number one. Number two, he's accurate, okay? If you don't have those two things, you can't be a great quarterback, period.
That's right.
All right? He makes great decisions. He's accurate, and he's tough as boots, man. He's got leadership ability. He can throw guys open. He puts balls in small windows, which in the NFL, if you don't do that, the ball is going to be picked and going the other way. So I just think I've seen it over and over from him. He's tough. He can escape. He can throw. He's got a better arm than people think he does, but his accuracy is unbelievable. He's got the it factor, and if I'm Miami at number five, unless you've got tangible evidence that he is going to have, you know, major issues with that hip, it'd be hard for me to turn him away from the table.
I want to get to another guy, too, and I know he's from Clemson, but Isaiah Simmons. What does it mean, as somebody who knows defense as well as you do, when you have a guy that appears on the surface to be a really good three-level player, and Simmons looks like he has a chance to be can excel at all three levels?
Let me tell you, Steve, you talked about that Penn State bowl game where we played. We had a guy playing for us then named Carlos Dansby.
Oh, yeah.
Carlos went on to have about a 14-year career. And I'm going to tell you something. Simmons reminds me of Carlos Dansby. This guy's got range. I've seen him play the deep middle third. I've seen him play man-to-man on a wideout with some help. I've seen him rush the passer as a defensive end. This guy, like you said, plays at all levels of the defense. This guy is a game changer for a defensive coordinator. You know why? I can bring him on pressures. I can get him one-on-one matched up with tackles and guards. I can drop him into coverage. Oh, by the way, I can look like he's blitzing and he's the middle third, deep third player, which allows somebody else to be disguised in the pressure. I think the guy is going to make a defensive coordinator so versatile in the way he calls defenses, because you can literally put this guy everywhere on the defense in nine positions except corner.
And even at that safety spot, he can close. I mean, I saw him a couple tapes close.
And he plays the ball so well in the air, Steve. He's got great judgment on the ball. He's like a center fielder in baseball that can collapse on a ball and track it down. He can tackle people in open space. His body is big and athletic, and he can control it. He's just a phenom right now. When you put on the film, what I was so shocked about watching him on film was how many different things Brent Venable was able to do with him. And trust me, the coordinators in the NFL right now are licking their chops with the possibility of having him on their defense for sure.
Obviously, I saw a lot of Chase Young because of the Ohio State-Penn State games. When I've watched the tape, I've noticed he's had not just one or two, but he's got like three or four counter moves, which I think is unusual for a college player. What do you see?
I see a lot of natural knack that's hard to teach. That's to me what makes him very different. You know, there's some guys right now that just can't, they don't, you know, look, I'm not a guy that believes you can have five great moves. I could be wrong. That's my belief. I think that guys have usually one or two go-to moves and they can counter off those moves. I agree with you 100%. When I watch Chase Young, not only do I see a 6'5", almost 275-pound long, athletic guy that looks like he's a very smart player, I see a guy that carries with him a huge toolbox, and he knows how to use those tools on offensive tackles. He's not a one-dimensional guy. He's not going to go speed to power, and that's the only thing he can do, or, you know, just a speed rush, rip the corner. He's got a tool belt on him, and his ability to use all of those tools is different than most college players that you see. You might see it at a defensive end position in the NFL after they've been there 6-7 years. This guy's got it now, and he's a phenom.
Do you have a feel, Gene, for Yetur Gross-Matos here at Penn State?
I do. I love watching him play. Again, He's probably going to be a later first rounder. When I say later, I don't mean 32nd pick. I mean, I could see him going in the bottom half of the first round. But again, when you talk about a guy that really is lean, I love his leanness. He's sleek. You know, guys are going to be able to do a lot of things with him, Steve. He can drop into coverage. He can speed rush the corner. I think his best days are ahead of him. I still think he's going to be. He's going to continue to get physical. He's going to continue to get stronger. He's going to continue to up his game in terms of building the tools that he needs to be a phenomenal pass rusher. But I love the way his first step is. I love his athletic ability, the sleekness of the player, and I think his best upside is definitely 3 or 4 years down the road. You're going to see an NFL potential all-pro guy.
How do you feel, Gene, about press corners, and in particular, what have you thought of Jeffrey Okuda?
Boy, I'll tell you, he's special. He's something else, man. He is really special, and they don't come along. I've had 3 Thorpe Award winners that I've coached on my defense, and the thing that was common about all of them, they were all different, but the one thing they had in that was something that coaches like to say they teach, but you can't. That's great anticipation, great ball skills. When the ball is in the air, he knows how to go get it. He's got great ball skills. He's got good size. He's got that great anticipation where corners just feel it. They know the ball's coming. They can feel the route. They know how to anticipate, get jumps on the ball, and that's what Okuda does. He is as good as I've seen in a long time. He's the total package when I watch him on film.
One final question, because I know I do have to let you go as much as we're all enjoying this, and that's on the depth of the wide receiver draft. There are a lot of guys in this draft where you could get maybe a guy in the early third round that may have been an early second rounder a couple of years ago. What are your thoughts on the depth and the quality of depth of the wide receiver group, Gene?
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you just look in the first round right now, you're looking at the Jerry Judy's and the Justin Jeffersons. You're looking at the Henry Ruggs. There's a bunch of those guys in the first round, and then all of a sudden, you know, you go to the second and third round. I mean, think about the guy you got at Penn State right now, and K.J. Hamlin. I love that guy. He's going to be a slot receiver. He's going to make some noise in the NFL. Let me tell you, people don't realize the importance of a great slot receiver that's a blur. This guy can run. He's great with the ball in his hands. He's going to be a special teams guy. But I could go down and probably name 3 or 4 of those type guys in every round in addition to the first round. So I love the depth of the wide receiver class.
Absolute pleasure, Gene. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and really have great appreciation for your work.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Gene Chizik, SEC Network, former head coach at Auburn, Iowa State, won a national championship in 2010 with Auburn. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have Gene Chizik on the show today. Guided Auburn to the 2010 National Championship with Cam Newton as his quarterback. And in the National Championship game, slowed down that high-powered Oregon offense to win it. I want to say it was 22-19 was the final in that. And he's transitioned to broadcasting. He's been terrific as a broadcaster. It's great to have him on. I mean, we're doing whatever we can to increase the streaming numbers. I think we ought to do an on-air poll. I have an idea for an on-air poll.
Okay.
Would you put your kid in an Eagles onesie? See how that goes. Thought I'd throw it in there. And Sal Palantonio on the show tomorrow. And don't forget, their show tonight is on ESPN2. All right. And that will be the NFL matchup show at 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN2. Last night's show was terrific. Oh, my goodness. They're breaking down tape, going, you know, showing you why guys should be picked where they're picked and why there should be interest. It's just terrific. what they do.
ESPN has always made that show an injustice. Because they always put it on, like, bad times, and even during the season, like, at 6, 5 in the morning. That should not be there in those slots. I'm sorry.
See, and here's my issue with that. When ESPN was formed, you're an all-sports network. Aren't you supposed to do certain things that cater to the sports junkie? I understand catering to as much audience as possible, so I don't put that down. Not in any way, shape, or form. But shouldn't you have something that caters to the baseball junkie, the basketball junkie, whatever? And then to me, that's what, you know, what Sal does, what Greg Cosell does, what Bowen does, really good stuff. I mean, I was done watching that show last night, like I do almost every time when I watch that show. I walked away, felt like I was smarter. Isn't that the purpose of the show? I mean, you want to entertain. I got it. But to me, information can be entertaining. You can entertain in a lot of ways. But enough of the Sugar Lumbee football broadcast. You can entertain in a lot of ways. Oh, so many times you listen to those games and, okay, when's the Chief going to talk? Just kidding. But the information can be entertaining. I sat there just watching it. I was fascinated watching it. Fascinated. And they'll do the same thing again tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN, too. So I get the note from Matt. He says, Sal would like if you threw a couple promos in there. Like I said, well, that's easy. I love the show to begin with. As that's my kind of show. Now, it's not, you know. Again, you've got shows for different tastes, but I agree with you. I think what they've done with that is they've stuck it in spots where you're like, oh, okay. A show like that, you shouldn't have to work hard to find. That's my opinion. When it's that kind of quality, I mean, that's a quality show. And we'll have Sal on tomorrow at 4:06. Jerry Dulac at 4:06 on Thursday. And Jerry, of course, has done a lot of work over the years for the Post-Gazette and now does a lot of work on the Steelers Network. And again, he's another one of those guys who's a terrific writer. It's made a great transition into the broadcasting world. It's been great. It's been terrific. Now, the story on minor league baseball is there was a story put out today that minor league baseball, look, let's be honest about it. A lot of people are in survival mode right now, and that includes baseball. And the story came out today that the minor league baseball had agreed to the 120, which means 42 teams would be knocked out. Okay. But minor league baseball then came out after this and said, well, hold on a second here. Hold on. They're going to negotiate tomorrow. But there's no deal reached. And that's something that, again, the statement minor league baseball put out, because this obviously affects Williamsport, it affects State College and others, okay? Both sides are working on a potential deal to ensure the majority of the 42 teams would still have baseball with ties to Major League Baseball in a new system that has long-term viability, according to the report. The coronavirus pandemic has played a part in Minor League Baseball's apparent shift in stance on the issue, and J.J. Cooper of Baseball America notes how many Minor League Baseball teams are just trying to survive. But Minor League Baseball released a statement, let's say about 45 minutes ago. Recent articles on the negotiations between Minor League Baseball and Major League Baseball are largely inaccurate. There have been no agreements on contraction or any other issues. Minor League Baseball looks forward to continuing the good faith negotiations with Major League Baseball tomorrow as we work toward an agreement that best ensures the future of professional baseball throughout the United States and Canada. So we'll leave it at that for now. All right. It's good to hear Joe Lorig on the show today. It was good to hear Neil Coulong on the show today. And don't forget, you can go to WKOK.com. Check out the Steve Jones Show podcast, because you want to know why? You want to know why that's important, Matt?
Why is that?
Kicks up the streaming numbers. He's sitting at home right now. He's just shaking his head. Can't believe I'm listening to this. That's our guy. All right. And our thanks to all the people that have let us know how much they enjoy the fact that we're doing this show and bringing some sense of normalcy and information. Thank you for all the comments that I know I've received. Matt, I'm sure you've received many as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks to everybody on all sides of this.
Yeah, on all sides of it. All sides. You've all been not good. You've all been great. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Remember, online sales now open. Go online, Sunbury Motors. Check out the great product lines, the great deals. And don't forget the Sunbury Motors Service Department opens 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thanks to Neil Coulong. Thanks to Gene Chizik. Thanks to Joe Lorig. And thanks to you here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.